Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. Joshua Copeland joins us today. He is a seasoned cybersecurity professional and educator. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate you letting me come in and chat a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you taking up when we had a little bit of a scheduling issue with our prior, because we were going to originally drop an episode this Tuesday. Instead, it was this Friday, so I appreciate you doing that. I'd like to hear your story. How did you get started in cyber? Why did you get started in cyber? What led you to where you're at today?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was one of those folks who accidentally fell into IT and cybersecurity.
Me too.
Graduated high school and didn't have money to go to college. You know, I was one of those poor, broke kids. So I did what a lot of folks did and what my family has traditionally done. I went and joined the military. So I went off, joined the service, and became an airman in the world's greatest United States Air Force. Originally didn't start off in IT cyber directly. I was originally a logistics specialist, but they had a couple roles within the logistics field that required to do some IT stuff. And I was kind of the nerdy guy that liked to do computers, and I was building computers in my dorm room. So they came to me and said, you know, Airman Copeland, would you like to, you know, do this as a additional duty? And I was absolutely for that, you know, get paid to do something I actually liked doing rather than, you know, counting widgets in a warehouse. Mm-hmm. So fell into that, kind of morphed from doing some really basic help desk, you know, desk side support type stuff, eventually formally cross-trained into the communications field and did pretty much everything you can imagine, you know, desktop support, you know, help desk, routers and switches, servers, pen testing, policy, GRC, doing some really high level stuff at the MAGCOM level, you know, really focusing on policy from a larger perspective. Did that for 20 years, retired from the Air Force, you know, had a great run, and then did what most folks that have a military background with a security clearance did and moved into Fed contracting space, did a lot of cool work with some three-letter agencies running their cloud platform security teams, eventually moved into another organization and built an MSP for state and local government before landing where I was doing some good work with a organization, you know, really helping them build out their strategic program for, you know, the security operations perspective. In between there, I kind of fell into some roles where I've done field CISO work for a startup. I'm also an adjunct professor at Tulane University teaching cybersecurity, cyber law, cyber terrorism, cryptography of all things. I'm not a math nerd, so the fact that I teach cryptography is always amusing to me. And kind of really do a lot of different things in the space. So I enjoyed my career getting to where I am now, where it's, you know, able to give back a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you going through that, and also starting with your time in the Air Force. So thank you for your service. I'm prior Air Force myself too. And as I mentioned before we started recording, if I had remembered, I would have brought my Air Force hat and worn it, which I try to do whenever I have Air Force vets on here. But one of the things I do like to ask folks who have transitioned from the military into I wanted to say real world. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but what's something from the military that you, what habit or some skill set that you took from the military life into civilian life that has helped you in your career going further?
For me, I took a lot of the things I learned and grew up with the military into the civilian sector, or, you know, when I grew up and got a real job, as some folks put it. You know, take care of your people, they'll take care of the mission. You know, that's a huge thing for me, because you know, as much as we have technology, we have processes, we have all the cool things and new shiny toys, the things that make all those things work and make them really provide value to your organization is the people. You know, I can have all the great tools, but if I don't have the right people running those, you know, nothing's going to happen. So I'm a big proponent of you take care of people, they'll take care of the mission. And then, you know, I don't get yelled at, you don't get yelled at, we're all happy campers. So that kind of goes back to, you know, as a military commander, you have, you know, three things that you're responsible for: organize, train, and equip your folks. I had a fourth one, mentor, because that's important to me and goes back to taking care of your people. But make sure they have the right things, make sure they have the right training, make sure they're the right people. And when you put those four things together, you get some really cool magic in the cybersecurity space.
And I love that because that goes against a lot of what we seem to see as a perception in cyber of folks like working in silos. And really, I think that we do so much better in cyber when we don't work in silos, when we work together as a team. And I totally agree with the building up the people in order to accomplish the mission. And of course, the mission being to help secure folks as much as possible in businesses as well. But that doesn't always end up being the case. There are always threats out there. And particularly to small and mid-sized businesses, sometimes a little bit harder for them because they don't have the resources or sometimes even the knowledge of what the threats are out there. From your perspective, I know you think you mentioned you did some advisory CISO work or still do some advisory CISO work as well to startups. So, but also just across your entire spectrum of experience, what's one of the or a couple of the highest threats, if you will, in the cyberspace to small and mid-sized businesses today from your point of view?
I think for small and mid-sized businesses, the biggest threat is almost themselves. They don't see themselves as a target that a threat actor is going to go after because I'm a small business. You know, my revenue is sub-$1 million. They're not going to get a huge ransom out of me. And it's ironic in that, you know, 70% of all businesses in the United States are small to medium businesses. That's a huge target vector. And then also add into the fact that, to your point, they often don't have the budget or the skilled folks in cybersecurity to really tighten down and secure their environments. So that presents them as that juicy, low-hanging fruit where I might not get the, you know, $20 million ransomware payout, but if I hit, you know, 100 small to medium-sized businesses and get, you know, $100,000 payout, that adds up over time and they're easy to attack. They're easy to get, you know, access to because they don't necessarily have the robust cybersecurity requirements that, you know, a Fortune 500 company is going to do or a publicly traded company. And what's even worse is that depending on what stat you look at, for a small to medium business, the typical small to medium business will close its doors within 6 months after a ransomware. Just because of the cost related to it, whether it's the legal cost, the cost to recover, the fact that they can't recover, and all the kind of surrounding things around that. So most of these small to medium businesses are literally, you know, one breach, one ransomware away from shuttering their doors. And they don't necessarily understand that that's the case. So getting that awareness and leveraging all the great tools that are out there that they have access to, you know, is really where the focus needs to be.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up because that's sort of a soapbox issue for me right now. And to dive into it a little bit deeper, Bank of America recently, to use one example, they had a breach, and I believe that it was caused by a vulnerability. The vector was a third-party service provider in some way, shape, or form. Small business that just provided. It's the same story that we've heard for years and years and years. That's how Target happened back in 13 or 14. I can never remember which year it is. But where I think we have a problem in our industry is immediately folks started to get on Bank of America's case, if you will, pointing to the issue being Bank of America didn't do proper third-party risk management. And that may be the case. They didn't check on the their service providers' security controls. And we all know that that in and of itself is a not exact science. We've certainly distilled it down to like in some cases, just looking at SOC 2 audits, make sure that they've been done and then just throwing it away and saying, hey, okay, we've checked off that box. But I maintain that in our industry and in information security, that we've got a serious problem and that we are not serving small and mid-sized businesses correctly. And what I mean is that in that particular case with Bank of America, the root cause of the problem isn't Bank of America. It's the small and mid-sized business. And it gets back to what you just said, is that the biggest risk being themselves. And I think where you were going with that is that they don't have the self-awareness to understand, A, that they are targets, and B, that they don't know what they don't know. Well, first of all, do you kind of agree with where I'm going with that, or do you think I'm totally off base?
No, I absolutely agree with you. You know, if I was going to go after a, you know, Fortune 500 defense contractor like a Northrop Grumman or Lockheed Martin, I'm not going to go after them directly. You know, they're giant behemoths that have massive federal contracts. They have to comply with DFAR rules. They have to comply with CMMC, FedRAMP, all those things. I'm going to go and find someone further down their supply chain that might not even be a direct third party, but a third party's third party, and work my way up through that network where there's already those trusted bonds between these organizations, where even if I was Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman and I did appropriate third party vetting, I'm now, how many third parties am I going? You know, am I going to my third party's third parties and their third parties? How deep does the kind of nested Russian dolls go when you're mm-hmm. trying to do that level of vetting? And realistically, you can't go to everywhere. You have to put some trust right. in your partners. And that's where these small, medium businesses truly are putting not only themselves, but all of their partners and vendors into a precarious spot, because they don't know what they don't know. They don't necessarily know that they should be investing in that, because it comes down to dollars and cents. You know, every dollar I invest in cybersecurity is, from a business perspective, you know, a non-revenue generating, you know, work stream. Now, there are ways you can reframe that and go, well, if I get really good at cybersecurity, that opens my aperture for additional contracting at the local government, state government, federal government level, all of their contractors. But that requires a kind of a switch in your mindset of how you're going to run your business. And it involves, you know, doing some serious investing in, you know, talent or MSSPs, or getting, you know, some of the free services from CISA to come in and really do strong evaluations of what are you doing right and what are you have areas of growth.
So we recognize in the industry that ultimately that's the root cause. I totally agree with everything you said, where we understand that the third party risk, how far down the chain do you go? I love the Russian doll imagery, by the way, just opening up each one of those for those who don't know what that is. But therein lies, I think, the problem. It's we understand as an industry just how much risk come from these 70%+ SMBs that make up the market out there, how much they are critical in the supply chain. We recognize that they have an issue. And yet, as an industry, I don't see that we're putting nearly enough focus on that. And let me give an example to kind of illustrate where I'm going with this. I was recently at a regional conference, Southeast Cybersecurity Summit in Birmingham, Alabama. And part of the reason why I went there was I wanted to judge to see, given the sessions and given the vendors there, how many are directly addressing small, mid-sized business needs outside of the MSSPs that are there, or MSPs. And quite honestly, it was very few. There were some smaller consultants like myself. I wasn't a vendor there, but there were some smaller penetration testers, for example, that work in the SMB space, but very little. In fact, I went up to one, I won't name the company, but they're a well-known company, InfoSec company, that I asked them, what do you have as far as SMB solutions? And they said specifically, well, we have an SMB team, but they're not here. We brought the enterprise team here. And therein is the problem. Same thing with the sessions. The sessions, for the most part, were all geared towards either generic issues that are across the entire spectrum for information security, or geared towards those organizations that have teams and much bigger tools and all that. And I find that to be a real problem nowadays. And what I'm stuck on, and maybe you've got some insight into this, is that as an industry, how can we pivot? And we have resources for them. You mentioned the free ones from the government. We know the problem, but we're just not spending the time or the money. And I understand part of the answer to this equation as to why we're here is exactly that. It's money. When you go to conferences, who pays for conferences? Usually it's the vendors that pay for it. And they're going to want to sell towards the customers that will provide them the most amount of money. But as I wrap up my long monologue here for a second, just like the bad guys have figured out, well, you know what? There's money in margins, in volume rather. Small margins, big volume. That's why they go after the small and the small and mid-sized folks. Why can't we as an industry understand that and adopt that model and go after those SMBs where we would have, yes, small margin for each of those, but big returns because of the aggregate as far as securing the entire ecosystem?
So part of that goes back to we as professionals and we as, you know, folks who are in those vendor type organizations that are building out SAR4 tools and capabilities, we need to figure out a way to create tools and services that are secure and affordable for those SMBs. To your point, understand that we're going to make small margin, but, you know, large scale, you know, return because we're doing massive volume. And it's interesting when you see the folks who are operating in the same market, where you'll have a tool that, two tools that do very similar things at vastly different price points because they're targeted at a, you know, enterprise level versus a SMB level. And you're getting the same net effect, but just vastly different ways to do those with vastly different price points. You know, I like to use the analogy, you know, sure, if I want to plow a field, I absolutely can use a Ferrari to do that. Is it the best tool for the job? Probably not. I can probably get, you know, a much smaller, much cheaper, you know, lower grade tractor that allows me to do that job more efficiently, both from a productivity and cost perspective. But as practitioners, we're always shaping or chasing the really new shiny technology. You know, what is the new latest thing I seen at RSA or Black Hat or Invent or whatever the, you know, conference you went to that week or that month was. And we don't spend the time to look at the tools that we already have and the capabilities those tools have. You know, when I was doing kind of vCISO work, I would look at tool stacks and see that, you know, these largely, you know, SMB market folks, whether it be, you know, state or local government agencies or true SMB commercial entities, they were only using no more than 50% of the capability of the tool that they had purchased and they already licensed. And they wanted to go buy additional tooling because that's what the vendor market told them they needed to do. Right. And we sat back and looked at their total toolscape and go, well, if I use 100% of this tool and 100% of this tool and another 20% of this tool that I'm not using fully, I can get that capability that I'm looking for. It's not as smooth or as shiny as what, you know, this new thing that I've seen at the conference does, but it gets me the actual capability that I need. And I've already bought these tools. So that money I was going to spend on something, I can now reinvest in training on how to use the tools that I have already better, or actually addressing the real gaps I have in my capability coverage. You know, do I really need a additional, you know, DLP if I already have, you know, Microsoft 360 E5 licensing that has DLP in it? Well, unless you're a truly big organization that deals with a lot of intellectual property, probably not. Maybe I spend that and get a better grade EDR solution rather than get, you know, the traditional antivirus that you might have been paying nothing for. You know, maybe I get a SentinelOne or a CrowdStrike, or, you know, use, you know, the higher grade Defender from Microsoft and really start closing gaps versus just spending money on whatever the new shiny tool is.
And that, I think, is you touched on one of the big problems right there. And I get back again to the conferences and the sessions, because a lot of times sessions are paid for. You're a diamond or a platinum sponsor, and you get to have one of the keynotes or one of the other sessions, and it gives you an opportunity to basically push your product. You have some folks that go there that say, ooh, that's cool. We definitely need that for the organization. How many times have people, even in cybersecurity, gone to conferences, saw something, and then once they saw it, they were convinced that that was the tool that was going to solve things for them, and go down that path of purchasing it. Whereas what you just laid out is exactly what I think is missing from the presentations in conferences nowadays, a pragmatic approach to solving the SMB security problem with the existing tools that are out there right now and with lower budgets, as opposed to trying to sell. Now, how do we get there, though? I mean, how do we, if you were to wrap that up in a presentation and you were going to say, you know, send it to RSA, it's like, how would you sell that so that to maximize your chance of being able to be awarded the opportunity to present that?
So it comes back down to, how do I demonstrate return on investment? You know, ultimately, cybersecurity enables a business. What your business is will vary dramatically based off of what you're doing. Even if you're a government entity, you still have a line of business. You have things that you are obligated to do. And cybersecurity is one of those things that you use to enable those capabilities. So translating the bits and bytes into dollars and cents, how does doing these things make us better, faster, more secure from that perspective? And then sometimes it's a matter of, you know, leveraging expertise. You know, there are a lot of great associations out there, local chapters, where you have folks who have a tremendous amount of knowledge that are willing to share it, that are willing to go out and say, here is ways that you can do, you know, this thing better, faster, cheaper, and provide that capability from a very cost-effective perspective. But it's just getting it out there to where we're engaging more into that SMB market that might not think that they truly need cybersecurity. Because a lot of times it's they don't know what they don't know, so they don't really know how bad it is. You know, the example I use so many times is, you know, a CMDB, your configuration management database, the listing of all your assets. You know, if you're one of those Fortune 500 entities, I can guarantee you with almost certainty that you do not have 100% accurate CMDB. And you can't protect, you can't patch, you can't secure what you don't know you don't have.
Right.
And the advantage that SMBs have over these large lumbering organizations is they are smaller. It is easier to get your arms around what all you have. You just have to put some, you know, sweat equity in there to figure out what do you have and how do you protect that. And once you get that initial, you know, understanding of what do I have and what do I need to protect and why do I need to protect it, it becomes a lot easier to figure out ways to do that in ways that make sense and are cost conscious.
Well, I know that the general idea of suggesting that we need to focus less on the larger one strike big accounts and more on the smaller ones with lower margins and higher volume, that might be what we might call an unpopular opinion. How do you like that segue? So and the reason why I bring that up I know you've got a lot of followers and you have a lot of followers partially because of that you have been doing on LinkedIn this unpopular opinion on a regular basis, which I think is outstanding, because by doing so, you're forcing folks to think outside of their bubble. And I very much appreciate it. And I know that they're sometimes come, you're going out a little bit on the edge there, but you keep on going with it. And I'm just curious, I've never asked you this before, how and why did you get started by being the unpopular opinion guy?
So like a lot of other things in my life, it was completely by accident. I had been on LinkedIn for a while and had not really generated any content myself, but I had seen a lot of, you know, what I'll call the yay, everything's awesome echo chamber on LinkedIn,
yeah,
which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's not realistic either.
Mm-hmm.
And people are, you have to get a college education, you have to have experience, you have to have certifications. So I had, for reasons I don't even really understand why I did it, I just felt the need to do this one day, was I did a series of posts over the course of a week where, you know, education is trash. And I explained why that was my unpopular opinion. You know, traditional college education, particularly at the undergraduate level, less than one fourth of your degrees in your major. You have that spread out over 4 years. And if you understand how the academic environment works, that material might be up to 5 years old before it's even approved to be presented. So by the time you graduate, the material you learned as a freshman is up to 10 years old. And unless it's fundamentals, you know, 10 years is, you know, three lifetimes in cybersecurity.
Absolutely.
So, you know, where's the real value in that? From a technical standpoint, there really isn't. There's a lot of great things that I look at when I see someone who has a college degree. I see you're able to do long-term planning. You probably have some ability to work through obstacles. You have some project management skills. You probably worked in a team where, you know, somebody didn't pull their weight. You know, sitting on the other side of the table now as a professor definitely has reinforced that perception to me as well, that, you know, the real values of college education aren't necessarily the things that you learn, but it's the critical thinking and all of the things you have to do to be successful in college that are not, you know, did I learn the biology in my biology class? And did I learn the, you know, Roman history in my, you know, ancient civilizations class? But all the things around that and just being kind of more broadly educated. Same thing, you know, the next day I went, you know, certifications are trash. And from someone who has a preponderance of certifications, that seems very, very, you know, the opposite of what you'd think that I would hold an opinion. But it's trash because that's what we've made them out to be. I was interviewing somebody for a SOC role, and they had a master's degree in information assurance with a focus on health. They had CISP, and I asked a very simple question of, name a cybersecurity framework, regulation, or requirement that you're familiar with, and how does it tie back to the role that you're interviewing for? And I got a complete blank stare. They couldn't come up with, you know, NIST, FedRAMP, HIPAA, GDPR, FERPA, SOC 2, Type 2, you know, PCI DSS, nothing. Now, mind you, this person has a master's degree in information assurance, which means over half of their master's program is, you know, regulations, requirements, and rules and compliance issues. And they have CISP, and that's 26% of the exam is knowing that stuff. So if you can't, you know, come up with that at a very basic level of saying, you know, I would use NIST framework because NIST framework says these are the type of logs that you need to collect. These are your retention periods. These are the things that you need to do. You know, does your CISP really have the value that you want it to have? Is it because you went in, did a, you know, week-long boot camp and you got fire hosed information for 4 days and, you know, digitally vomited that onto a test on Friday and now you got the shiny sticker? Maybe that's
Measuring how well you can test sometimes, particularly like when you have like these boot camps. I know we're going way off on a tangent here, but it's like, you know, boot camp. I've never been a fan of boot camps because when you jam stuff in, usually it doesn't stick and you can't apply it. And that's another problem with our industry. But I love that's one of the things I look forward to on LinkedIn. I know you don't do it every day, but what do you have, like Mondays and second Mondays, something like that? I think.
Yeah, I mean, Monday, second Monday, you know, Wednesday, pre-Friday and Friday.
Okay, so you do it every day. Okay, that's one of my favorite things that I still come back to LinkedIn on. But, and actually, in some ways, that helps me with decompressing sometimes because you add both a little bit of humor, but you also add a way to think. But I do think that we all have to decompress because the stresses of cyber, in all seriousness, can get to be overwhelming at times. What's one of the things that you do outside of writing unpopular opinions to decompress from the stresses of cyber?
I am one of those folks. I am indeed a bourbon aficionado. You know, I'm not, you know, hoity-toity and, you know, I will only drink the finest, most expensive bourbon, but I do enjoy bourbon. And then I also, you know, like getting out and, you know, put my knees in the breeze, ride my Harley. You know, Louisiana has some really great twisty roads around the area. Never those two things at the same time, because that would be a bad idea, drinking and riding a motorcycle. Not good. I love riding a motorcycle because you have to be absolutely present. You can't think about anything else other than being on the motorcycle because everyone's literally trying to kill you.
Yeah, but you're right. And that sometimes just the whole idea, I loved how you said being present, that you're not worried about the future. You're not obsessing about the past. And that is one way to definitely in anything that you do to get away from the stresses of cyber. Future plans? Do you plan to write a book of unpopular opinions at some point in time?
I am not writing a book of unpopular opinions, but I do have something I'm in the works with, you know, some other folks, one of them being a, you know, podcast host that does something with, you know, virtual CISO series, maybe.
I've heard of that guy.
Maybe. Where I'm getting some of the thought leaders within the cybersecurity space, and we're going to write a anthology book on leadership from, you know, 20 to 30 different leaders' perspectives. So it should be really, you know, an interesting read to see how all these people from various different backgrounds that are leaders in the space talking about leadership, particularly leadership in cybersecurity. So we're looking to probably have that, you know, out and published by the end of this year.
Awesome. That means I got to get writing on my part, I guess. So, well, Josh, listen, I know we went a little bit over, but I really appreciate great conversation. You could talk on all this stuff for like hours, but appreciate your time and everything that you do for the community. Thank you again so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Greg. It was an absolute pleasure.
And everybody, stay secure.